that we're holding UW campus. We're undergraduates, and we're just doing some oral narratives that UW Wisconsin, I can't remember the gentleman who actually started the project.
Troy Reeves, and there's an oral history of LGBT narratives that we're collecting to kind of document what's happened since 1960 in the LGBT community in Madison. And then the recordings that we make are going to be archived in the libraries, and depending on the wishes of who we interview, they can either be like put on hold where people can't access them for 10-15 years, or they can be just deposited in the collection so that future historians can have a capture of what's the moment and what came before. Okay. So if they do research,
well, I mean, I know some of it. Like I said, I wasn't here from get go, but I mean, I've got the history to that point. But there's some stuff.
Yeah,
and honestly, it's just literally what you know and your take on it. Okay. And it's, we know, like we said, we're trying to get a bunch of them and just put them out there so that they're there for, you know, if anybody ever wants to use them, at least it's all documented and we've got some stories. And especially with, you know, I was going to say Club 5, no, it's just 5 now. But, you know, so obviously I figured you might have some fun stories.
And the present, that's the other important part, because eventually this will be, unfortunately, the past. And we'll be old.
So we have a waiver sheet that we ask you to sign that just says that you're consenting to the interview.
Okay.
And that it's going to be taped. And then after we're done, the green one, you know, after we'll ask you to sign again. And then if you want to put a stop on it, or if there's anything that, you know, you'd like taken out that you said that you don't want in there.
I understand.
So, and basically I'll just start probably asking you about some of your, you know, just at your own, about yourself. And, you know, kind of where you grew up, basic history, that kind of stuff. And then we'll just kind of go into, I guess, so maybe anything Madison, related to the LGBT community. Like I said, it's kind of whatever you want to say and kind of your story and, you know, I know.
I don't know much of the story.
So if that's cool with you.
Yeah, we should start with your name.
It's Dave.
Okay. And do you have that on? I didn't even know. Mm-hmm. Oh, it is? Okay. So we are recording.
And is that short for David?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's when we're testing it out right there.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good deal.
And then could you give us your age?
Yeah, no problem. I'm 49.
Okay.
Cool.
49 years old.
Birthday.
I was born in October of 1962.
Okay. Very cool. Well, October.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about like your childhood and maybe your family?
Sure. I grew up in Hartford, Wisconsin. My dad was a teacher. There were 3 kids in the family. I have 2 younger sisters. Both of them have now moved out of state. My dad passed away in 1994, and that's kind of when I began my journey onto moving on. I had left home after graduating high school and actually moved to my uncle's farm, which would have been my college education.
Uh-huh.
But I worked as a hired hand on the farm and also went to tech school at the same time. And in my final year of tech school, I went there for 2 years in Janesville. This is going to be a weird story, but my uncle's cousin worked for Pizza Hut. And I was going into small business management, so it seemed kind of a tie to start with them. So within 2 months of working for them, I became a shift manager. Then they opened a new store in Stoughton, Wisconsin. I moved to Stoughton. Within 6 months, I was an assistant manager. A year later, I was a manager. And I managed for Pizza Southern Wisconsin for 13 years, and that's what brought me to Madison.
Very cool.
So it just kind of was a journey for me. Once I got to Madison, like I said, I worked for 13 years for Pizza Hut. I worked at various locations all over Madison.
Uh-huh.
The last one I went back to, they had moved me back to Stoughton at that point. I chose I chose to move on because it was 13 years old. It was a lot of moving, and I didn't like moving. I didn't like establishing myself, making friends, building a crew, only to have myself have to move.
Absolutely.
I was more of their trainer, and that's kind of what I did. So it was time to move on and find something else. After Pizza Hut, I had five different jobs. I was working five different jobs. I was cooking, and at one place, I was working at Aldi Foods as a manager. I started here at Club 5, working for Ed as a door person, just as a part-time job. I helped open the new Red Robin in Monona, and then I was working with helping a friend remodel his restaurant. So I kept myself very busy. I think because of Pizza Hut, I was used to working 50 to 60 hours a week, so not having a job would have been not realistic for me, so I picked up as many jobs as I could just to keep myself busy. And that kind of led into what happened here at Club 5. I became a manager at Aldi Foods, and I kept this job here at the club working for Ed. Kind of led to where I am today, which is the owner. My personal like coming out story, if there's a story, I had questions about myself for a long time, and I knew I was gay, but I wasn't to a point where I felt comfortable coming out, and being from a small community in Hartford and living with relatives for a long time, nothing ever seemed like the right time. When I moved to Madison, Ed at Club 5 actually is one of the first people that I met. I came out to the club one night by myself, scared, sat in the corner, had a cocktail, and he came over and bought me a drink, and we talked a little bit. And I actually met someone at the bar that night whose grandparents' farm was across from my uncle's farm that I lived on after high school. That was gay, and all of a sudden we started talking, and things just became a little more natural. After that, it took me another 2 months after that, and I started coming out to friends. It took me about 6 months after that to come out to family. Never got a chance to come out to my dad. My dad had passed away before. But for me, it was an awakening. I didn't like who I was becoming when I wasn't out, because I knew in my heart I was gay, but I hadn't ever expressed it to anybody. And for me, my turning point was, if it's that easy for me to lie to myself, it's very easy for me to lie to other people. And I really honestly didn't like who I was becoming, because I was a little bitter and a little angry at everybody, and I felt like I was trapped. So it was amazing when I came out. For me, it was an amazing experience. It wasn't because of sex, it wasn't because of anything else. I was just finally able to be myself and be comfortable. I've met so many what I would call lifelong friends now. I know people that I'll have in my life for the rest of my life. A great experience for me in Madison, I happened to come out about the same time, within 4 years, that when the Gay Softball League started in Madison in 2005. And I had met some friends at the club who were involved in that, and I got involved in that, and I've been playing in that now. This is 2012, so I've been in it for the full 7 years. And that has led me to, we've formed friendships. We travel all over the nation to tournaments. We meet gay people from all around the United States. I mean, we play in Palm Springs, we play in Tampa, we play in Orlando, we play in Seattle, we play in Minneapolis, we play in New York, we play in Washington, D.C., we play in Chicago. I mean, we've met so many friends. And when we travel these tournaments, they are gay tournaments. So you meet a lot of friends from other places. And it's based on an athletic activity, not a sexual activity would be the best way to, we're there, we're just enjoying who we are, and there's no walls. Like, you don't have to hide who you are, you don't have to feel, you know, ashamed, or you're just able to go and relax and be yourself. So for me, that's been just a very freeing experience, and it was something that, I passed when I was younger. I enjoyed playing softball and always had been involved in things like that, and I thought when I came out that was something I was going to have to give up, when it was something that's even helped me grow more. We've had a blast. Actually 4 years we've been very successful. We've won like first in like five different tournaments, and second in a bunch of other ones. So we've had some success, but at the same point, I'm also almost 50 and I'm getting to be the old man on the team. And I love it when the umpires tell me that I'm older than they are. So, but we're having a blast with that. And as for my experience at the club, like I said, I came here the first time Ed came across and got me a beer. Asked who I was, had seen me when I was working at Red Robin, and it's then I've seen you work there. He had seen me when I worked at Pizza Hut. I was a manager of one of the Pizza Huts he used to come into. It's like, I never knew your name. What's your name? Blah, blah, blah. I've always seen you work. If you're ever looking for a job, let me know. So that's how everything kind of started here. I put my application in with a lot of urging from Ed and a lot of thinking about it. And that took me about 6 months to get the guts up to do it. Like, I knew it was a huge step for me.
Yeah.
So I began working for Ed. I started at the door. Wasn't looking at it as a full-time gig. Did the door. Picked up a couple of happy hour bar shifts, nothing at night. They had their experienced staff here, and they had their way things were going. And after I was here about a year, the assistant manager decided he was leaving. And Ed's like, I'd like you to move up and take that position. And I'm like, I had managed for a long time at Pizza Hut. And I'm like, I've got the restaurant experience. I don't have all the bar experience. He's like, no, you've got the people experience. I'd like you to move into that. So at that point, it was like, well, I'm either going to jump on this opportunity or I'm not. So I became his assistant manager. There was still another manager at the time. Ed took me under his wing, showed me a lot about the business, filled me in a lot of the history that he had been through. He was able to give me a perspective. I mean, I came from a pretty quiet little town. And there were gay people there. I didn't know there were gay people there. And Ed gave me more of a history and what it felt like for him growing up. I mean, Ed grew up in Marshall, Wisconsin, a smaller community. He remembers coming out when he was younger, going to bars, and how they'd have to leave the bars, you know, and cower out back alleys to try to get to their vehicles, you know, sitting in the bar and having rocks being thrown through the windows, you know, how scared they were. And to how far it had come. And when he started the club, it was good to get his perspective. I spent every day with Ed when he was here. We were just here every day doing books and stuff. But, you know, hearing those stories, hearing why he put the club, why he wanted the club. Club 5 started in 1998, late 1998. It was after the hotel fire. Ed was downtown previously in the building where Essen House currently is. There's a little bar in the end called Northwoods. They used to be called Maneuvers, and that was Ed's first bar. Ed owned that bar with Bob Worm, who also owned Essen House and still does. And then there was the hotel. And the Maneuvers was kind of, you know, people would go there before, but once the dancing would hit, that was, you know, they'd have their slow time. After the hotel fire, the opportunity came up for Ed to move to where we currently are, which is the old Bombay building. He was looking for a bigger location where he could, you know, expand his business, and thinking maybe the community needed another gathering place once the hotel was gone. His intent was never to replace the hotel. He knew how special it was. But he obviously was a businessman and he saw an opportunity. So he opened Club 5 late 1998 with the number one goal of being another secure place that the community can go, feel safe, express themselves, be themselves, and feel safe. Everybody was welcome, but that's what he opened. It opened originally, we had a restaurant in the front half of the building, and had the dance floor, and then he put in the men's bar, which is the barracks, and the back part of the building, he put in a female bar, it was called the Foxhole. And that's the way things stayed for, you know, quite a long time. He ended up putting on a patio, redoing a lot of the building. And then I'm trying to think now, late, kind of skipping all over, I apologize.
No, please. Any way you do is fine.
And after I began working for Ed, like I said, I was here a year. A year after I became the assistant manager, the manager decided to leave. The manager decided to leave, and at that point, Ed asked me if I wanted to take on the manager role. And for me, that was a little bit of a decision because part of me didn't feel it was right because there were a lot of people that had been here longer than I was and also knew a lot more about the community. I still felt not like an outsider, but I didn't know as much. Like, is this a good spot for me to be since I don't know, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to honor the community the way he wanted it to be. Or know the things. So after some, you know, decision making, I decided to take on the opportunity and became his manager at that point. And for me, it was a great decision. I mean, I learned more and more. Like I said, every day I spent with Ed was just another day of learning. And he had his way about him, and a lot of people in the community sometimes didn't like Ed because Ed was just Ed. But Ed also had his, you know, the reason he did things, and with the money he gave back to the community and things that people, he did a lot more giving than I think a lot of people are aware of. And he just did that because it was his expectation as a gay business owner, that's what you do. But he kept a lot of that to himself. And no matter what was thought, and he was still a businessman first, he always was a businessman. So then in late April of 2008, Ed got sick, and we all thought, well, we had the flu going around the club. I had been gone for a weekend. I came back. He's like, I think I'm going to take this weekend off. I'm not feeling the best. So he took that weekend off, came back the following week. He's like, I'm going to go to the doctor. I'm still not feeling right. And at that point, he called me on that Friday and told me to come to the house and pick up the change fund because he did the banking. That was something Ed always had his hands in. I did all the book work here, but the bank, we all had our own specific. And Ed was very good with his money, but that was understood. It was his money. Asked me to come to the house and get the bank bag, and he said he probably wasn't coming in for the weekend, and I'm like, you all right? And he's like, I have to go back on Monday for a biopsy. They think it might be some kind of stomach cancer. But at that point, I was also instructed by Ed I couldn't tell anybody. I wasn't supposed to tell staff. I wasn't supposed to tell anybody. And he was planning a trip at the end of April. He was actually going back for his third time to Cuba. His current partner was from Cuba. Some of his family members had moved up to Madison through the years, but he would go back to Cuba three times a year. And Ed in this community that he would go back to was kind of a legend because when he'd go back, he'd arrange ahead of time, they'd roast pigs, he'd set them up, and they'd have like huge community festivals, and Ed would supply the food, and then he would take his partner's family that lived down there and they'd go shopping, and they had just, you know, to them $100 worth of groceries was enormous, and he'd buy just groceries, and he'd take down like medicines for them, and just like simple things like aspirin and toothpaste, just a lot of things that a lot of the people couldn't always get their hands on. But he'd go down three times a year, and he'd save up the money and find his way to travel, and just getting to Cuba is scary enough. You got to do enough things, and kind of when you're down there, you're just kind of not the part of anything, so you have to hope nothing happened. But the community down there became very responsive to Ed too. They actually had a service after he passed, and they took some of his ashes down there and they took him out to the ocean. The community actually had a little celebration down there, and they had flowers all over the ocean. It was beautiful, but something they did. So he was well thought of. He had other things that he did. But he got, like I said, he said he thought he might have had stomach cancer, and then he went back the following Monday, still didn't come back to work. And I'm like, okay, something's not right. Tuesday he calls and he goes, I'm in the hospital, you need to come to the hospital. So at that point he's like, it is cancer, we're not sure what it is, they think it's pancreatic cancer, we're not sure in anything seriousness at this point, but they're telling me it's pretty bad and they don't think it's anything they're going to be able to cure. They're telling me 6 months to a year. And he looked at me and sent everybody else out of the room and he goes, I need you to decide in the next 24 hours if you want to take the club, otherwise we're going to get rid of it, because his partner was from Cuba and had no knowledge of it. And he goes, we need to decide. He goes, this needs to be decided now. So basically I had 24 hours to decide what to do. And it was an exciting time for me, not because of that. It was an exciting time for me personally because my partner and I were finally buying our first house. So everything was kind of happening at the same exact time. We had just got our house approved. And it was like, okay, now what do we do? Because now the finances are all tied into the house. So we were able to work together. I gave Ed my decision that, you know, I'd do the best I could. Yeah. If that was his decision, but I'm like, you'll be fine. Which unfortunately never did get better. At the end of the week, he was down pretty bad, and they told him at that point 6 months would be the longest he'd be alive. And the following week, they were taking him home. They took him home on, tried the first time on Wednesday, there was complications, got him home on Thursday. Went and saw him that weekend. Still at this point was not told. I was told I can't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. There was like five people who let me tell. Everybody else, they just kept saying he's resting up from his, you know, good for his vacation. He's not feeling well. He just wants to make sure he's healthy when he goes on his trip. Yeah. So that following, it's now it's like Saturday the 17th or 18th, whatever the date was. I took a couple people up to see him. wasn't really there much anymore. I mean, he was in and out. They had him on some morphine, things like that. Still talking a bit. You know, there were little talks that we had those last couple days. They were really short, but very pointed. And then Monday, his sister who was up there, he had four siblings. He grew up in Marshall, like I said. He had four siblings. He was the youngest of four. Called and said, well, you might want to come see him. She goes, I don't know how much longer's left. And I'm like, because he first went to the doctor on April 4th, and this was the 21st, and he passed away on the 21st, so 17 days from the time he found out he was sick, and he first went to the doctor. So I went up and saw him on that Monday, and he was there, but he wasn't there. I mean, you could hear us talk, and his eyes would look at you, but there was no response. And then at that point, I was beside myself. I'm like, I was told to have a meeting on Sunday. I told the staff things don't look good, but we got a couple months. So this is what's going on. He doesn't mind you knowing, you know, but this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen with the jobs. Things will be okay. We're all still going to be here. So I went up and saw him, and I actually went on that Monday, because after I saw him on Monday, I'm just like, I was beside myself, because I was like, ugh, am I really ready to take this on and deal with everything that's going to happen? And I ended up going to a place that for me was like my little church, but there was a little lakeside place in Monona that's very quiet, a lot of people don't know about, and I went and just sat. And that's of course when I received a phone call that he had passed. So then I had to call the staff back in right away the next night and let them know that it's done. So, and that kind of turned into what today is, which has just been, our goal was to give Club 5 a rebirth, was to reinvest in the business, change the interior. Took down a lot of things. You know, we removed the women's bar. We made that into a dressing room. We added, you know, the restaurant had been gone after the first 2 years. That area became another bar. The men's bar just recently just became another more of a patio bar. But we're trying to move along with society as well. We don't want the place to be so exclusive that other people don't feel comfortable here.
Sure.
So that's kind of where we are now.
Wow.
As far as the club. But, you know, Ed was somebody, like I said, who did a lot. And the way Ed touched people was different. I mean, Ed had the ability at that point in time when the economy was really good. There would be a lot of people, and there's a lot of people in the community that stepped up after Ed passed away and talked to me that, you know, were hurting or they had been fired from their jobs for one thing or another. A lot of times it would be something gay related, and he'd offer them help, and it would be like giving them a job, giving them something to do. And a lot of people tell me stories where Ed was there for me for 4 months, gave me work, helped me survive, you know. But a lot of people didn't know that side of Ed. Ed kept that part like very quiet. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, the things you find out about people afterwards. But the thing with Cuba was amazing, but you know, he didn't talk about that. That was just something that he did. So
you took a lot on in a short amount of time.
It was crazy, because then there was legal battles after legal battles after legal battles for the last 2.5 years. 6 months ago we finally got everything settled.
Well, that's
so
good.
It took a long time.
What were the legal battles?
It was, like I said, Ed had a partner who was from Cuba, and then he had his family who was okay with Ed being gay, but it wasn't like a... and the legal battle wasn't so much for the club. Unfortunately, it came down to money. And the club, unfortunately, got stuck in the web of it because the two sides were going after other things, and they wouldn't release the club. And the part where I had to get involved and ended up paying through the nose for some lawyers was the fact that I didn't want to sign a lease. I had to renew the lease, and I'm not going to renew the lease on a building if I don't own the business.
Right.
It has to be settled. So I was finally able to pay both sides off something to get them to both sign. So I, at this point, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the things that Ed left ended up, I think, in lawyers' hands, which was sad. Because the sites couldn't come together. The club, fortunately, we were able to separate from that and get that out of there. So we were able to carry that on, you know, what he started here.
Yeah.
So.
Excuse me. Obviously, it was very important to him. I've never heard that story. I think that's amazing.
Yep.
Especially with the philanthropical side of it, that, you know, was just kind of quiet and reserved, that he didn't let anybody, you know.
He did a lot of things that were quiet like that. One of Ed's big things his family told me about, like just special things he did that you would have never seen. Ed kind of came across, I mean, the joke around town always with Ed was he was kind of the curmudgeon. But like his family always talked about whatever he did, any things for holidays. Ed was a cook before. That's what he went to school for. Wow. He was a culinary guy. So every year for holiday, he'd bring over a big bowl of either dessert or salad or something. But Ed's thing was that bowl, he'd go out and spend a lot of money on this bowl. So his family had all these decorative bowls that he had given them over the years. So that was something he had always done whenever he took a plate somewhere. It was something he would just do. So his family had those memories. There was the things he did for Cuba. He took on the Pride Committee for a while when it was still Wisconsin. Before it was Wisconsin Capitol Pride, it was Madison Pride Board. And it had been involved, and there were a lot of things that were happening. And Ed became involved in the Pride Board. And when Ed came on board, one of the things that the board before that had asked him to do was, we want you involved because you're going to run it like a business. So he came on board, and popular or not, he ran it like a business. And he did things where the board wasn't going to lose money, was going to be able to meet their obligations. Whether it seemed fair, you know, from where the, you know, the Magic Picnic Weekends had started, which Ed had been involved in, to a point where it was more of a community thing, there wasn't a lot of money needed by a lot of people. He had to turn it into something because the goal of the community was to have something more.
Yeah.
And it was being, I don't want to say it was being mismanaged, it was just being handled in a different way, and they asked him to come on board for that reason. Fortunately, he came on board. Unfortunately for the club, sometimes it wasn't a good thing that he came on board, because a lot of people saw it as an event that was sponsored only by Club 5, and that it was just being put in place to make Club 5 money, which wasn't the reason. And things were very clearly kept separate. There were definite, you know, books, things that were kept separate. Ed would use the club money to pay for any legal fees that they ever had to deal with. To this day, we still have, you know, the magic name is still floating out there. It was never legally signed from Club 5 to anybody. Little things like that. But like the board, he was the one that always made sure they had their status things update. He would pay that money just to make sure that it was taken care of so that they could keep their nonprofit status. And he's the one that went into God. He got it organized in a sense that it was where it should be. Mm-hmm. And ran as a business. When Ed stepped down, he stepped down the year before he passed away. 2007 was his last year on the board. He was the president. He stepped down that year after the Pride. When he stepped down, there was a, not I want to say a surplus, but there was a very healthy account, mm-hmm. which is the goal, because they could move on. They could function. They could, you know, their bills were paid. Everything was taken care of.
Right.
You know, it was in the tens of thousands where there was plenty of money to go. And Ed stepped down, and the board then was taken over, and it was within shortly a year after that that it was gone.
Could you just...
The whole thing went. Because I think, I want to say, I'm sorry, Ed stepped down in 2006. 2007, the new board took over Pride. Ed passed away in 2008, April of 2008, and that year in 2008, we did not have a Pride in Madison. That was the year they announced that there wasn't going to be a Pride because the board had no one. So he stepped down in 2006. 2007, the new group took over. It was still Madison Pride Board, but it got totally, something went incredibly wrong. Everybody in the community has different ideas as to what it was, but things went incredibly wrong. And then in 2008, we were all, I mean, the one thing I guess I was thankful for from knowing the side of Ed and the people that knew Ed is we were really glad he wasn't around to see that, because it was something that he had worked to get into place, and then it was just gone, like instantly.
That was 2006. There was no Pride.
2006, there was a Pride. 2007, he was no longer on the board. I remember how hard it was for that year of Pride, because he spent a lot of time at the club, because he used to go down there and spend all of his time there.
Sure.
So he's like, all of a sudden, I got all this free time. and then 2008, when he passed away in April, that following year, there was no Pride.
And so what's your theory on why?
mismanagement. Mismanagement of funds, and I think they had some things that weren't in place. I guess there were issues with the treasurer at that point. And unfortunately, I don't think they had the checks and balances in place where somebody could get into the account, and that's, I think, what happened. It's, you know, what we're all being told had happened. It also, it's tough when people get into it. If they haven't ran a business, and it's not that non-business people can't run it, but they have to look at it, there has to be a check and balance. And the year after I stepped down, they tried to really grow it a lot bigger by adding more tents, adding more entertainment, adding more food, and when that happens, all of a sudden there's all this money going out, and there's nothing coming in, and they're not balancing it because they're trying to, you know. And then, you know, the following year, you know, and the only reason the club knew about it is because a lot of things people had been used to dealing with that. So the liquor companies, everybody's calling here trying to get money from us, and we're like, that's Madison Priding, that's not Club 5. So a lot of that was coming to light. Earlier, before Ed's death, I think he had a feeling something was going to happen. He had sent a letter to the Pride Board saying, I'm getting these notices, something's not right, what's going on? We're getting no response. And then Ed got sick, so that was pretty much. So I think at that point he knew something was going on with the board, but it had fallen. So and after that, that's when the new board formed, the Wisconsin Capital Pride. And they came in with their new mission and their new role to some success. Unfortunately, I think the same
kind of things are going on.
You're looking for too much to begin with, and then just not taking it simple and growing it and mismanaging at the beginning. And I think they've kind of gotten themselves right back into the same boat. And unfortunately, I mean, as a business owner and somebody that was, you know, who will support Pride because of what it stands for and what it is. On a personal note and as a business owner, it's very difficult for me to decide when the right time is to celebrate right now, because Pride Board hasn't stepped up. We don't know really. We have an idea, but you know, when we're saying, are we still going to do it the same weekend? Well, why don't you call the other bar owner and find out when he's doing something? Because Dino from Wolf's currently has an event that he has on the square. Not on the square, but he has on King Street. So I called Dino and asked him when he was doing that, and that kind of is when I decided, well, we're going to do that, so that we at least have two of the gay bars, if not that Pride has to be all gay bar related, but we're kind of having a time when we can celebrate together. And that's when the Pride Board, what there is of it at this point, decided they're still going to do their parade, which I think is all we're going to have this year from the Pride Board is the parade itself. There won't be an event. They'll sponsor the parade, which at this point is probably the best thing, because at least they're realizing they can't overdo it. Unfortunately, the participation level has gone way down in the Pride Board. Everybody's afraid to get involved right now, because I think it's just, there doesn't seem to be a direction. For myself, I guess what I was started with there, trying to say, it's in my mind, it's kind of depressing and it's kind of sad, because even as the gay bars in the community right now, we can't work together to decide when we want to do it. Everybody's trying to establish their own thing and turn it into, try to word this properly, turn this into their own moneymaker versus doing it for the community. And it doesn't have to be a huge thing for the community, but it would be nice if, you know, the days that I hear about were from Magic Pride weekends, when people got together on a Saturday afternoon and went down to the park and they had a little food. They had one food stand. You paid a little bit of money to get in. There was a beer tent. There was a little bit of simple entertainment. Everybody went down and had their day together to celebrate, and then everybody went to the bars at night or did whatever they did, but they had a day, and then they'd have the parade on Sunday, and it was simple. And that's, I think, what a lot of the older part of the community desperately seeks, is they want that. They remember the days. It takes them back to the days in the hotel, when there was that little sense of community and they were together. And now it's everybody, I think, is trying to establish the new identity, and unfortunately we're just in this flux. Whether it ends up 5 years from now that Fruit Fest ends up being the new Pride, then that ends up being the new Pride. Unfortunately, I think because just with whether I don't want to say it's the animosity, with the ability of the bars to work together, it would be a little easier if we'd all pick a time to support it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't be on anybody's particular property or in anybody's backyard. It would be a lot easier. But unfortunately, trying to get everybody on that same page is extremely difficult. Like, you know, our solution in the past, you know, after I'd passed away, before the new form of the board, was each bar, if they want to be involved, throws in so much money. We go back to the old Magic Picnic, keep it simple. It's not Milwaukee Pride. Milwaukee Pride is a huge event. Pride Fest has grown to something huge. Madison probably will never be that. It doesn't need to be that. I think what it needs to be, though, is have this community to give people a chance to, in a setting where everybody can afford to go and enjoy it. And unfortunately, it's still not that. Everybody's got their own ideas how it can be. And instead of trying to get together and discuss it, everybody's just kind of now went this way of doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So my choice was to try to honor when the traditional weekend is, which unfortunately is to be third week in July, and it got moved to August with the Capitol Pride Board. So that's when it's been celebrated. So I'm trying to stick with that, so at least there's somewhat of a time period that we're all working together. So if we're trying to get people to come to Madison to celebrate, that at least we're all doing something that same weekend.
Yeah.
So.
Do you think there's less community in the LGBT community? Double word there.
Right.
Now versus, you know, 10 years ago, or do you think we're losing that part? That community, like you said, like the old timers, you know, being able to go down there and hang out. I remember, you know, years and years of going down there on Saturday afternoon just hanging out at, you know, right, the park or whatever, and like you said, it wasn't much, but it was
just being
there.
It didn't have to be
much,
it was just being with everybody, and I think just walking around and seeing everybody. A lot of times it's the only time you see people from the community.
Exactly.
I unfortunately think it's changing, and I don't know if it's because of society or if it's because of us stubborn bar owners that can't work together. I don't know what it is. It's just, it's hard to watch. The current Pride Board has asked me to get involved a couple of times, and everybody has warned me otherwise. And my biggest reason I haven't is because I saw what Ed went through. I saw how beat up he got. I saw the words that came back to him. Everybody was like, it's only being done for the club so the club can profit. And I don't want that to affect the business. So that's why I personally haven't gotten involved. It's sad. I mean, when I hear about the arguments that the Pride Board has, I mean, we've had people from the bar that have been on the board. Every one of them has stepped down. Just because, I guess, you know, the meetings are arguments, or it's just being, I don't understand why, how something so simple that's meant to celebrate our community has turned into such a
drain.
Yeah, where it just has to be so emotionally draining when it can really honestly be very simple. And I don't, you know, and I don't want to say it's because of the younger generation. I don't want to say it's because of the older generation. It's just the way things are, you know. I mean, a lot of times I'll hear from the older generation, well, the young kids want all this entertainment and they have to be entertained, and they'll go on the social media and everything's horrible and it's not entertaining and it's not fun and it's boring and why am I wasting my money, when the older community just wants that chance again to relive that community just one more time, even if it's for a few hours.
Yeah.
And I really think that's what it needs to get back to. It just needs to be simple. Madison needs to realize that it just needs to have that. We need to have something so this community can feel whole. And right now I think we're just all segmented a little bit too much. And I don't think personally, even as a gay bar owner, I don't think we do enough together to make the community feel involved as a group, because we're all doing our individual things.
That's true.
And we're all trying to, you know, one of the, I will say personally, because it's turned into a battle with myself here and Plan B, I respect what they do. I love, they're great guys, and they've done a great thing for the community, and they've given the community a great outlet. But when it starts turning into things like who's the number one gay bar, who's the number, it doesn't matter, and that's unfortunately what everything's turned into, is they're getting the awards, we're not getting the awards, what do we have to do to get the awards, what do we have to do to get recognized, what is it, and it shouldn't be about that, but unfortunately right now it is.
Right.
you know, and our part of our remodel, the thing was like, well, how do we regain some of that? What do we have to do? And unfortunately, you know, that's a part of it. I don't want it to be a part of it. My philosophy since I took over after Ed passed away was, and Ed was here, and that's unfortunately he's not here to talk to now. He didn't have to deal with a lot of competition. At that point, it was the Shamrock.
Yeah.
And it was occasionally C's or whatever was going on the east side, whoever was in the Rays building or whatever was going on. There wasn't a lot of it. So he never had to deal directly with us. Plan B was coming, and we knew it was coming. But sometimes I wish he was here because I would love to get his advice and to know. So the philosophy I've tried to go by is I'm going to make Club 5, now known as 5, the best I can, and that's what I can do. I can't do it. I can't react because of what somebody's doing at another bar. I have to make my location and what I want my bar to be and my vision the best it can be. And if it's not what the community wants, then that's something that we'll learn in time, one way or the other. But yeah, it's that part. It's hard to watch that part of the community when I see, like, you know, organizations. As an example, I'm in the softball league, and I see how well some of these organizations are doing. Like, the softball league has grown every year. They have, you know, huge fundraising events. They are their own little community. They pull in. They're self-supportive. They've helped some of the other leagues in town start. They've financed them. I mean, they've worked together. The hockey league is another great league that's done great things. There's the rugby team that's traveling all over. So there's a lot of gifted people that run these other organizations. It's just unfortunate we can't get everybody to come together on the one thing that I think we need to come together on, which is to give this community just a sense of whole once in a while, because I think it's just become
segmented.
Yeah. Everybody's own separate identities. I mean, the Latin community works with us here. We do two things with two different groups. One's called El Grupo Vida. The other one's called Luna Bonita. They are gay Latin groups. They're ran by the gay Latin community, but their whole goal is to tie themselves into the full Latin community. For us, they're successful events financially, but for them, they've become, we've had, Luna Bonita's been here for 2 years. They're huge events. You know, they've gotten a lot of press nationally for their events and what they're doing and how they're bringing the community together. And again, that's another organization that's thriving and doing their things, and it's got some leadership, but unfortunately we just can't get everybody together. I don't know what the answer is. I really wish I knew what the answer was, where the personalities could all get together and just say, hey, we just want to keep do something. Because I think there's a lot of leadership out there, unfortunately. I just don't know which direction it is. You know, it's little struggles. It's little struggles like there's an open business group that does for, like, the business leaders in the community, and then there's still the Madison Business Alliance, Gay Business Alliance, and unfortunately those two groups don't work. One group feels like the other one came in without listening to the other one, and there's just all this inner struggle, so everybody's kind of got their own little projects. And it's just too bad that we just all can't get together.
Right.
You know, sometimes I think I had somebody that I worked for years who used to say one of the biggest things that'll unite humanity again is if the aliens actually come. Because then we're going to all have to work together. And unfortunately, I think that's almost what we need in the Madison gay community, is we need an alien to come in right now to get us to all join together to work at the same goal.
Yeah.
To survive as a community instead of all worried about our own. But, you know, maybe it's just a sign of the times, the way society is right now. Everybody's so into what's going to help them that we've all kind of lost the group focus.
What about larger politics? Or, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine.
You said to the point, I accidentally...
No, you're fine. As far as larger politics, I mean, in general, I mean... This is a day after yesterday when things are still a little fresh after the election.
Yeah.
It's a very odd time. Ed used to always say, in my lifetime, I don't think I'll see these things. You know, he saw his advancements and how things have come along. Unfortunately, with the powers that be right now, I don't know in my lifetime if I'm going to see some of those things change. I think, in general, I think society is changing. I think the views are changing. I think the next generation that's coming along has the right ideas. I mean, I see that in places even like our softball league. Our softball league has a lot of people from the straight community that play in our league. They're very accepting, and everybody's like, what's the big deal? We don't understand what the big deal is. It's ridiculous. You know, whether it's, you know, the hospital visitation rights or the gay marriage, that generation, the new generation, doesn't get it, thinks it's ridiculous. So I think it's something in the future that will, it will change. I don't know in my lifetime if I'm going to see it, because unfortunately I think there's still too much of a gap there. There's still enough people that are trying to hold on to the past, because I think they're so afraid of the change and what it's going to do to the country, and I don't think it's going to do anything as dramatic as they're all envisioning. I mean, I deal with it in my own family. I have one sister, my youngest sister, who lives in Arizona, who's very open to it, very supportive. And then I have another sister who doesn't want to see anything happen with it. Absolutely, it's, you know, it's, it should never happen. It should never be allowed. It's against God's will. So I try to respect both opinions. I deal with it in my family every day, and I do respect everybody's opinions on it. I, you know, I think us trying to force it down, the gay community trying to force it down anybody's throat isn't going to help. But at the same point, I think we have to keep our voice heard. We cannot be quiet. We can't sit back. It just has to stay in their mind and let them know. You know, I had a meeting last week with an insurance salesman who was very pro-Scott Walker and let that be known to me. And after about the fifth thing, I finally brought up, you know, the visitation rights and things like that that he's trying to take away again and go through. And he's like, I wasn't aware of that. And I said, it doesn't make any sense to me. You know, what would it be like if I said, you can't go see your wife in the hospital? You know, I said, it didn't happen to me, but when I sit and listen to the customers, especially some of the older customers here, you know, I had a gentleman who sings for the Madison Chorus that came in, and a couple of gentlemen that passed away that were in their late 50s, and he came in one night, and we were sitting at the bar, and he actually started crying a little bit. He goes, it's just, he goes, these deaths hit me harder and harder, and he goes, by now I should be used to it. And I kind of asked him what he meant by that, and he said when he grew up, it was very hard for him, especially when the AIDS epidemic came out, because he goes, people that had spent their lives together weren't allowed to be in the hospital with each other. You know, their partners were dying alone. They had to watch friends die alone. You know, and it, to me, it doesn't get down to a gay issue, it gets down to a human issue. And I just hope that someday society sees it as that. It's not a sexual issue. It's just an issue of human rights, of people wanting to, like, be there. I mean, it's a horrible thing that, you know, for him to say, you know, I watched all my friends die, and I can't tell you how many of them I had to be with their partners consoling them because their partners couldn't even be with them. They wouldn't let them in the room. These people had to die alone. You know, and their family wouldn't be there because they were gay.
Right.
So these people would sit in these hospital rooms and suffer and have to die on their own because they weren't allowed the visitors. Their family wouldn't come back. They wouldn't accept them. He goes, so I've seen, and I think it's horrible that that's, you know, a possibility that it might go back to that. Obviously, there's legal ways, hopefully, around that, but it's sad that we have to have the living will and we have to have these things in place. That just isn't, you know, where does the human factor go? So I think for me, that's the most disappointing. There needs to be that human factor, and I don't understand where society that's gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to hear that story. Then I heard the story from him. I mean, I was just basically in tears right along with him, because I'm like, that's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
You know, to have it back in our face again that might happen again. You know, it's even a basic right. You know, the marriage thing. I don't know. Like I said, if I'll see it in my lifetime. I've had a partner now for 8 years. You know, we've talked about going to Canada and doing all those kind of things, but it's just a piece of paper. It's not really... In our hearts, we know. We know we're joined. Our families accept the fact that we're joined, and that's what matters to us at this point anyway. So whether the United States or anybody else wants to recognize it, that's their choice. But the scary part is, if something would ever happen, we don't ever want to be in that situation. Like, I can't imagine a worse feeling in the world. I personally can't imagine that feeling of being in that hospital room. So I've spent my life with Matt, who's my partner. If it's 2 years from now, if it's 20 years from now, and I'm sitting in that room and he can't come in and see me, it's just, you know, we kind of tell each other now, if something ever serious like that happens, and that's going to, if that turns into an issue, I'd rather just go die at home.
Yeah.
So at least I can be around you, because I don't want to die alone. I mean, we can't always have that choice. But if there is that choice where somebody's in the hospital and that's something, I would, you know, it's sad to see that that's something that we still have to argue about today. You know, I don't understand where that hate comes from and why that's an issue. Because nobody's asking you to approve of having sex with another man, another woman. That's not what it's about. It's a human thing. And I guess that's the part for me that's really hard. It's hard for me to see. It's hard to watch. It's hard to stomach. And then when we go back and we talk about the simple things like Pride and Madison, I mean, those things are all, they're minor. But I think the strength of the community is if we keep that community together somehow and we're able to, like, at least let our voice still be heard. And I think the next couple of years are going to be so important with that, with the way things are. You know, with Scott Walker in charge, and, you know, thank goodness for the voters in the 21st district that were able to get that Democrat in the Senate, so we at least got a little reprieve.
Yeah.
So there's a little check and balance, at least for a couple months. And it's not that he's the end of all either, but it's just, as a community, it's just, this is the time when everybody's, I know, a little down, and this is the time when we need to be stronger and we need to get together, and that's where things like Pride would be very helpful. To have that chance together and to have that voice and just unite and know that we're not out there alone and we're all kind of feeling the same way. I mean, those are the important times, I think, as a community we need to come together, and that's when it doesn't need to be about the money and who's making cash.
Right.
And I think that Pride, when it originally started Madison and when it was the Magic Weekend, they had the right idea.
It's just about community.
Yep, getting together. Yeah. It never was about us. You know, one organization trying to make some money or trying to boost their organization or trying to do this or one bar making money or one. It was about the chance to get together as a community, even if it was an afternoon to spend together where the community had a place where, hey, we can be together.
Where was it?
They used to have it at Brittingham Park. One year that I remember, my first Pride that I ever went to, it was over on the east side because Brittingham was closed down that year. So they moved it over on the northeast side of town. It was kind of by Oscar Mayer.
Demetral?
Yes. That was my first Pride ever. I remember going over on my bike, and I was out, but not really out. Kind of walked up, and I was amazed. It was very cool, and it wasn't anything extra special. They had music going on in the pavilion. They had one food tent. You came in, you paid whatever it was, you got your food. There was some beer, there was some music, and it was just a lot of people gathering. Some people may have looked at it more as boring. I thought it was, for me, it was amazing just because look at all these people. For me, it was a chance to see gay people in the community together. And I think that sometimes, too, we forget about all the people in our community that aren't out, that maybe need that place. And it doesn't, I understand even from owning a bar how scary that a bar can be to the first place to come, because you're thrown in such a comfortable atmosphere for everybody else that's comfortable. But I think that's something, you know, that's what it needs to be about. Unfortunately, I don't know how we get back there.
What year did you first go? What were your thoughts when you were walking in?
I went in 2000... 2003. I think it was 2003. And I was scared to death. Because I wasn't sure what to expect. I had been in Madison for about a year and a half, but I have never been out. And it was just, for me, it was great, because it wasn't what I had feared. My fear was that it was just going to be this, let me see how I can word this appropriately. It was going to be all these guys dancing around with tons of makeup, carrying purses, everybody slurring, and it wasn't that at all. It wasn't about sex. It was about just people being themselves and having the chance to be free and express themselves. And yes, there were rainbow flags and all that, which is all good. And it's all it was. It was just a chance. And it was neat. Because now as I look back at them, the few that I went to after that, it gave people a chance to just relax. Go out on a Saturday afternoon, be around other people in their community. You know, actually see so many people in the community. The biggest thing I hear from softball right now is they love softball because when they come to softball my night, they're able to meet so many people from the community they never would have had an opportunity to meet if they wouldn't have been playing softball. Because right now, As a gay community, we meet at the bars. We might meet at our little social groups or little organizations that we're part of. But that's it. You know, we don't have... I don't think we have that chance to see each other in numbers. And I think it's so important. I think it's important not only for, you know, the older members of the community, it's important for the younger members of the community to see what they're part of. You know, you're not here alone. There's a history here. Mm-hmm. I just think there's so much of that out there. I think we're missing that. And I don't, as a business owner, you know, there's things I'd like to do to promote that. But, you know, last year when they had the event downtown, they wanted to do an event here earlier in the day. And I'm like, well, you can do a picnic, but I don't know what we're going to get. I think the problem is if you have it at a bar and you have it at their location, it immediately becomes intimidating and it turns into a competitive thing. And it's not what it should be. You know, it's just, and I know with the rules and regulations of the city, there's certain things they can't do, but it's just too bad we can't get back to doing something simple. Let's just go back and have a picnic. Let's have a food cart where we got one group of people doing the food. It's, you know, $5 that includes your plate of food. You have to, you know, if we have to have, you have to have the beer tent up or whatever you want to have. If you want to have that, you're going to have the fences. So there's going to be some, you know, license costs involved, but just keep it simple. You know, and then, you know, there's how many bars in town that have DJs? It gives the DJs a chance to get out and play their music. It doesn't need to be about, you know, we have Lady Gaga as our headliner. It doesn't need to be about that. I don't think Madison needs to be at that. We can go to Milwaukee for that, for Pride Fest. We can go to Chicago. We can go to Minneapolis. All those things are neat. I think what Plan B does with Fruit Fest, I think, is fantastic. Unfortunately, I think the unfantastic part is that it's their own private event, and it's at their location. I think if that was at a separate location, it would be a totally different story, and everybody would get involved. They have the right idea as to what it can be. It doesn't have to be that big. And they're doing some things to give back to the community, so I don't want that to come out. Right. I think what they're doing is fantastic. Unfortunately, I just think it's their thing.
Yeah, Park is more inviting to all versus...
Yeah, where it's not ran by one group. You don't feel that.
Right, it's their gig.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my idea has been for years, and I don't know if it'll ever happen, is that we contact all the groups, and every group is allowed one person on the board. And that board gets together and discusses, this is what we're going to have. You know, what kind of ideas do we have? You know, and then that out of that group, they'd elect their board and go from there and keep it and do a, you know, and as a business person, do it as a one-year venture every year. Raise the money or find the donations you need to do what you need to do to make the event happen and be done. Don't overextend. Don't, you know, pull in bands from Canada that nobody's heard in, or a third-rate singer from, you know, some reality show 10 years ago that nobody knows about. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you run into all the travel for them, and then their agents, and then their hotels, and, you know, it's just, you know, I saw, unfortunately, not this, it wasn't this past year, the year before during Pride, they had a lot of groups they brought in for entertainment. And they wanted a venue later at night to come over to. So for us, it was nice they brought them over here. But what I dealt with their managers and the fighting backstage, and this is about us, and this is... And I have a feeling what had happened, and everything made a lot of sense after that, is they stonewalled these people on the Pride Board who had never dealt with agents before and hadn't dealt with managers. And these managers walked all over them. And they overbooked these people. I'm sure they paid through the nose. And, you know, it comes into people's self-pride, and they have to sometimes not be afraid to ask for help. I mean, I get a lot of my ideas from the community. I mean, the young people in the community have a lot of great ideas, and so do a lot of older members. It's just you have to listen, and everybody's got to be willing to listen and not have the one set idea. And I think if everybody had that mission, you know, for Pride in Madison to get back to the Magic Picnic, if that's what they want to have, then this is what the goal is. This is the end result. We just want to have it. It's not going to be glamorous. It's not going to have 15 rock bands. It's not going to have, you know, drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race. It's not going to have any of these things. This is just a chance for us to come together as a community. That's what it needs to be. And you get those groups, and as long as everybody's on that page, or the people that want to be involved are on that page, you know, and every group's like, hey, we're going to need, whether it's, you know, whatever the amount of money is, we're going to need to pay $2,000 to the city. Do we do this through donations? Do we do this like everybody's going to go out and we're going to fundraise together, raise it, be done with it, and close the books?
Yeah.
Versus trying to carry it on, and then all of a sudden there's a program, and then there's advertising, and you have to have somebody to lay the thing out, and then I understand the importance of all that, and as a business person, I like to have the advertising, but sometimes I think more effectively we could just do it on a simpler basis. I mean, the softball league, we have our logo on the jerseys. That's it. It's very simple. But we support the league that way. The league has a rotating night where they go to each sponsor.
Oh, cool.
Each Monday night, that's the sponsor bar, so we go to that location. Everybody from the league goes there to kind of pay back, so it's not just like, well, hopefully you go there. And it's worked out great. And it's given everybody a chance to socialize again with other people in the community that they don't always get to see. And I think that's the one thing right now that's such a positive with all the sporting groups is they're giving people that opportunity. The guy gay volleyball is another one. Huge. And there's huge groups out there that have figured out just giving people an opportunity. But unfortunately, there's still the disconnect because we don't have, you know, we don't get to see each other as a community that much. Our pride is our one chance, and we're still spread all over the place. Like, we don't get that one opportunity to see each other sitting in a park.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's going out on a Saturday afternoon for 2 hours and having a burger and just seeing a bunch of people we know.
Yeah.
You can go home and go out on your life, but I think that's something we need because I think that's going to keep the community. Unfortunately, right now, I just think everybody's off in different directions trying to establish themselves as a leader or what's going to be the right way to do it, what's the best way, and then we aren't working together to just
do it.
Do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What role do you see, just more generally in the community? How do you see Club 5 or now 5 fitting in, and what part of the community or what roles?
I think as a bar, you have to be in a business, you have to be very careful as to how much of a role you can take, because it is still a business. It's going to always be viewed as a business. I think as an individual, as a bar owner, you can do other things. I think Ed attempted to do that, and unfortunately what Ed went through scared me. And unfortunately I think this came back sometimes to hurt his business. So for me that's been a fear. As a part of being a gay business, I think we have to do what we can to support the community when we can, with also being responsible to ourselves. You know, making sure that we're still paying our bills and meeting our obligations, and supporting our community where we can. You know, I currently do a lot of things. We're involved with Luna, like I said, Luna Benito does a lot of stuff. They do a lot of fundraising. They help out Avalon here in Madison, which is an elderly care home. We do our continuous fundraising that's been every year for St. Jude's. We help out as many riders as we can with the AIDS rider. We do shows for outreach. So I try to give them opportunities. We've done fundraisers with the rugby teams. There's a men's, women, and women's team. We've done things to help out volleyball. We've helped out the traveling softball teams. But a lot of times I challenge the groups in those situations. It's like, I'm not just going to hand you money. You're going to have to come in and you can work for it. I'll give you the opportunity to make the money. And most of them, what we've used is we've used a section of our bar, which is the dugout up there. And they'll come in on a Saturday night and bartend and sell their Jello shots. You know, and we'll match part of their tips, and then they'll fundraise that night, whatever else they want to do. And it's worked out great. Like, one of the volleyball teams that travels all over to national tournaments has been able to travel every year because they come here for three Saturdays during the year, and they're able to raise all the money they need. So I think it's just that we open our door enough to that. There's the Madison Cougars women's football team, part of the gay community, part not, but we work with them. They've done 3 tailgates here now the last 2 years in a row to help fund their team, and those have turned into huge events for them. So I think as a business owner, I look at it for the gay community. I have to, I just have to have the opportunity. If I can give people the opportunity to help build what they want to build and support, as a leader, the business, I can't say, should maybe be the leader. I think it needs to be the owners. on a separate basis, and those are the people as individuals. Individuals need to be leaders for this community. I don't think it can be a business that leads it, because I think that raises too many red flags and causes too much concern for everybody. It just needs to be, you know, leaders, whether they come from a gay business, whether they come from an organization, whether they come out of, you know, their home. It just, it's getting back to that. So I think that's how I see the club fitting in. You know, I want to support those things, but I have to be careful how supportive we get of it, because I think sometimes it can backfire if you do too much.
When you were working the entrance, what was it like sitting at the entrance to the bar, and what kinds of conversations were you having?
Doing the door, I love the door, just because I got to know everybody that way. I got to experience drag queens for the first time in my life. Quite the experience, we won't go into, but it's definitely a unique part of our community. I mean, we do a lot of shows here now, and I really enjoy everything they do, and I enjoy the group of people. But the door, it was just, you know, you see everything at the door. You see the people that are coming out for the first time and trying to just let them know it's okay, take that deep breath, you're going to be fine. You know, people coming in from other parts of the state that haven't been here before, but you also see people that are here every week and talk to them, you know. You're able to meet people. I mean, for me, it was a great opportunity because I hadn't been out that long. So this was my way to meet people. And it was a safe way for me to meet people because I'm working.
Exactly.
So I can just kind of wait and see, you know, and still do what I'm comfortable working. I think that was just kind of the way, either that was for because of the farm or working for Pizza Hut or my parents, it's just the way I was brought up. Like, my comfort zone is just, I love to be working and seeing things from that side. So, I mean, the door for me